From KRCB in Santa Rosa, it's Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour with Michelle Anna Jordan.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from the dairy families who own Cabot Creamery, 5 generations of farming and making naturally aged cheddar cheese in Vermont. On the web at go.coop.
You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out the door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil, and you fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Jordan. How are you doing this evening? I am so excited about tonight's show. I've been thinking about this for a long time, and something just came together the last few days so that I'm presenting it tonight. And before we start talking to our guests, I want you to relax, let go of any expectations about what Mouthful might be, and think back possibly to your childhood. As I was driving to the station tonight, it began to rain. And I know that if you're listening to this as a podcast, it might not be raining now, but certainly you've been in rain at some point. And because we're talking tonight about clotheslines, I remembered many times when my mother would suddenly say, "Oh, it's raining, hurry." And she'd go running out into the backyard with a basket to grab all the laundry off the line. And in my life, that doesn't happen so much anymore. Dryers, of course, are ubiquitous. But there's something missing without laundry drying on the line. The main way I have thought about it over the years is that there's really nothing like a freshly made bed with sheets that have just come in from outside. It's like you're sleeping on sunlight. And on the other hand, I like towels that are dried actually in a dryer, but crisp, line-dried sheets, there's just nothing that is sensual in quite the same way. And I think we may be thinking about clotheslines again for a number of reasons, possibly because they don't take any energy other than some physical energy. But it also seems to me that one of the things that has happened in America at this point is we've separated ourselves in many, many ways from the natural world, but we miss it. And so we end up doing what might later be judged as slightly insane things, like spraying things in the room that smell like the sun or like pine trees, or burning candles that are artificially made to smell like it would smell if you just went outside and opened your door. So all of that is sort of what I began thinking about when I met Laura Schaefer of Line Dry at the last of this year's Storytime for Grownups. The theme was High School Confidential, and I was telling a story. But one of the most intriguing elements of the evening was Laura's artwork, photographs of laundry. I was completely intrigued, and here you are. I'm so pleased that you could take the time to be here. Why don't, real quickly, sort of tell us what Line Dry is.
Line Dry is an eco-art business. It's a combination of my art photography and my desire to get other people back online by selling them whatever they need to hang their clothes out, which is clotheslines mostly. I sell about 5 or 6 different models of store-bought clotheslines, and then I custom make beautiful craftsman trellis models with my husband. And then I've got art, so I photograph laundry, and I'm very interested in the beautiful quality of it as a visual subject.
How did you go off on this avenue?
Well, I was working for a photographer in Santa Cruz. He was a National Geographic photographer, so I was kind of in that milieu of photography. And I got divorced, and my ex-husband got the dryer, and I got the washer. And so I had no choice to hang out. So instead of being really angry about it, I just decided to turn it into an art project. And I started seeing, I had a new roommate who was a massage therapist, and she always had these white sheets flapping on the line. And I thought, gosh, this is kind of pretty, and started taking pictures of it and thinking of it as a long-term project and seeing it in different periods of weather and light. And 10, 12 years later, I'm still taking pictures of laundry, and I just find it a really beautiful subject. I find clotheslines everywhere I go, if not my own laundry, seeing my children grow up with their clothes. And living in Sonoma County, I get these fabulous landscapes, just beautiful, beautiful, romantic landscapes with little clotheslines in the background. And I just find it a great subject.
Are you finding that you see more clotheslines now than when you started 12 years ago?
Well, I used to live in Southern California, and I saw almost none. And it kind of was getting me politicized to say, why are there no clotheslines here? And finding out that a lot of housing associations restrict them. They're against the law to have a clothesline in your backyard.
Really?
If you have a housing association, chances are you cannot have a clothesline.
That makes a lot of sense.
Well, people think it's tacky, so, and that's why I wanted to have beautiful clotheslines and start selling them so that it wouldn't be seen as something ugly, but, you know, it could be a beautiful piece of yard art, like a trellis.
Well, we're going to get more details about that, but I want to introduce our other two guests. We have Deborah Colati, an artist from Sebastopol, and you have some little tiny clothespins and fabric right here in the studio. Deborah, what's your connection to clotheslines?
To clotheslines. Well, I make art out of things that people give me, and my mother-in-law cleaned out her closet, and I was able to take dozens and dozens of beautiful textiles, tea towels and cocktail napkins that were linen that were probably only used 2 or 3 times, and I started making artwork in them, on them, and then wanting to display them, and I found the clothesline is a very benign, and we have a certain nostalgia for the clothesline, and so it's a very, even some of my topics are a little challenging, and so the clothesline is a very soft approach, and people don't have fear or anxiety when they approach it, so it's a very unguarded application.
So you hang at times provocative pieces on just an innocuous, gentle clothesline, that sort of thing?
Both. They can be, some of the artworks have a gentle or a sweet intention, and some are more provocative, definitely. This one here in the studio is one I just returned from a trip to Italy, and I just the night before I left, I ran up to the studio, and I took a couple of handkerchiefs and then a series of handkerchiefs and made 3 artworks, and each of them say the same thing, but this series of 5 lines says, in the universe, we are alien. And as I traveled, I would meet people and I would ask them to hold up a handkerchief or a whole clothesline and photograph them with this piece. And mostly they understood what it said, I think, I hope.
Well, interesting. I have to look at the pieces. So these look like they're... Where are they from?
These handkerchiefs I found in a Chinese import store in Hartford, Connecticut. And they have pictures of Southern Belle in bonnets, and they're a sort of a Chinese interpretation of a young lady, and they're completely goofy and ridiculous, and I couldn't resist.
They're wonderful. They're really, really wonderful with these little, those little tiny clothespins that you see in children's toy sets.
Yes, yes. I have a suitcase full of clothespins from around the world. And metal, the electricians use certain kinds of clothespins, and various trades have different shaped clothespins. Mm-hmm. And then every culture and every country has their own standard, whether they're a pinch type or they're just a wooden peg or maybe a bamboo shaft that's split and tied. And so they're just a delightful little innocuous homemaker's tool.
I just tonight used a clothespin that is full of cat teeth.
Oh.
Or cat mark. Cats have chewed on it because I use it to keep the bag of catnip closed. And sometimes one of my cats will knock it off the shelf and then start trying to chew. You know, they get very excited with catnip.
That's nice.
I also want to introduce Skye Nishelsky. Skye, you are involved in something called the Clothesline Project at Sonoma State. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah. So a few students from Sonoma State that I'm working with through Student Advocates for Education are going to be putting on the Clothesline Project for, I think, this is the fifth year that we're doing it. And it's a national and international project using clotheslines to display different shirts that survivors of sexual assault make. And then they decorate these shirts in any way they feel kind of represents their particular story, and it's a healing it's a healing process for them to make these shirts. And then to display the shirts is a way to like air out society's dirty laundry of this horrible thing that's happening and that's not being talked about. And so these clotheslines are displayed in universities, malls, different places where a lot of people are walking past, and they're forced to kind of they are struck by these clotheslines and read the messages on the shirts that are designed by the survivors, and it's really powerful. So,
wow, that's astonishing. So, it sounds like from your explanation that sometimes they're graphic. I mean, sometimes there's words on the shirts, that sort of thing.
Mostly, the shirts that people submit to our particular clothesline project that we put on every year, and every year we bring back the shirts from the previous years. Mm-hmm. So every year it grows. Mostly it's words, and they'll say things like, the only time you bought me new glasses was when you punched me in the face, or different messages and stories. Whatever they feel compelled to write or draw, it doesn't really matter. They can use paint or embroider the shirts.
Mm-hmm. Now, are the shirts all the same, or is that optional too?
Well, the national project began in Massachusetts in 1990, and originally the shirts were color-coded depending on what they were a survivor of. So if it was incest, they were a particular color. If they were a victim of homophobia and were assaulted because of that, then like the shirt was lavender, for example. But with our project, the shirts are not color coordinated.
Mm-hmm. How about style coordinated?
No, they're mostly just
whatever
t-shirts.
T-shirts.
And we provide the student. We make a table for an entire week for students to come and make shirts if they want to, and we provide them shirts, or they can submit a shirt that they've designed that they already had.
We're only 14 minutes into the show. I bet you are surprised as I am that clotheslines are so provocative. Lori, I think we have a song that you've done about clotheslines.
Yeah.
Is that right? You want to tell us real quickly what we're going to hear?
Well, it's a blues number that came out of my head instantaneously almost when I realized I'd never heard a song with clotheslines in it.
Don't wanna wash it in the river, no, I don't wanna beat it on a rock. I like my washer gentle and tough, cycles warm, cold and hot. But I line dry, hang 'em up, hang 'em up, line dry, hang 'em up high, line dry, hang 'em up. Hang 'em up, line dry, hang 'em up high. I got a family, so I got to wash. seems most every day. 9-10 loads if the beds get wet, it's the price I've got to pay.
That was our guest, Laura Schaefer of Line Dry. That is a great song. So what I want to do now is just sort of open up this topic. You all seem to be inspired by clotheslines in a variety of ways. So starting in no particular place, maybe tell us, Laura, about a client. Like, you sell somebody a clothesline, you install it, and then do you go back and photograph their laundry?
If they want me to, yeah, I get a real kick out of it. And I'm starting a series, Who's Hanging in West County. So anybody who wants to have their laundry photographed, I'm hoping to do that and take a show out to inspire people to get out and do it. They can reach me at linedry.com, and I'll come photograph their laundry.
And we'll give you all the contact information again at the end of the show. So if you don't have a pencil right this minute, don't worry. And you can always, I always forget to remind you, if you hear about something that interests you on Mouthful that you would like to pursue further, you can send me an email anytime. Mouthful@michelleannajordan.com is an easy way to remember. You can also go to the KRCB website. We're hoping to have start posting links to all of our guests' work, sort of a new project for the new year, we hope. So when you photograph, are you photographing actual existing laundry, or do you sort of manipulate it, set it up behind the scenes and for the purposes of photography?
I have done both. Mostly I like verisimilitude. I find it actually works better. When I've staged laundry, it looks staged. I did my mother's clothesline this summer, and my seminal memory of laundry is her white sheets in her drying yard. And so I went there this summer, and I got all her white sheets out of her linen closet and hung them up and photographed them, and they photographed beautifully, but I hadn't really washed them. And so you could see all the wrinkles.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I knew it when I looked at the photographs. So it kind of, I like the reality of photographing real laundry.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just think it's more fun.
And what about you, Deborah? How you're hanging artwork that you've already done?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the opposite position. Rather than a realistic situation, I'm recreating an environment and playing with that image, but really altered in my own way. Mm-hmm. So it's a very different environment. I was thinking about Skye's project, though, because I was telling a friend about the clothesline project that you've done, and I've seen that project installed. And I think for me, when I've seen that project, all the T-shirts represent a body. They fit over a body. So when you see these clotheslines, and it's an issue of abuse in some manner, I think what you really see more than the clothesline is you see this crowd of people. And I find that very, very compelling.
I'm just looking at photographs of some of the things that you've done. And Lessons for My Son. Let's talk about that one. Partly I think it's one that will translate into words fairly well.
Yeah.
And it's a very striking image.
My mother-in-law's closet, and this was one of her little hankies. It's blue with little white puffy flowers. And then an old linen table napkin with the hand embroidery, and it's got holes in it, and it's kind of falling apart. And at the time, my son was about 4 or 5, and he was struggling with the transition out of diapers, and also the understanding of what is death. So if you kill a bug or some animal or a small creature. And so we had all these conversations about eating and pooping and living and dying, and so I went into the studio and rubber stamped, very simple process, rubber stamped these and hung this up as a piece. And it's just so simple and direct. There's no you don't have to know art speak to comprehend it. It just is. And
I think, do you want to say what both say?
The blue hanky with the white puffy flowers says, "If you eat, you poop," and the white hanky with that sort of tattered says, "If you live, you die." And the title for the piece is Lessons for My Son. And It's very, very simple, just two hankies that are strung usually across a corner in a wide space. And there's, for me personally, I'm as an artist, I'm trained, and we could talk art speak, and we could get very theoretical, but I feel like that excludes the layperson, and I really want to include the layperson, and I find it very intriguing for me to try to have the dialogue with the common person, and I think the clotheslines do that. They bridge all the classes, even if you live in a condominium and the rules say you can't have a clothesline. I think we all know where the dialogue starts. So I find these kinds of materials to be an easy access and not exclusionary.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said at the very beginning, it's also a very gentle way to broach a kind of tricky area.
It sounds like we've got at least two tricky areas.
Yeah. I mean, the shirts, you're right, they do put a human face on statistics because each shirt represents a person, much like the AIDS quilt. That's where the inspiration came from. Mm-hmm. Just how the AIDS quilt puts... each quilt is one person. And so, I think they now combine quilts and ship them off to different locations. So maybe each section of the quilt, at least, is a person, and in that way, it helps to, put these numbers, these statistics that are hard to visualize, and it puts it into a visual, which helps a lot of people.
Humanizes it, as soon as you see a shirt, right? Casting the shadow on that shirt is the person who wore it, so it's. Clotheslines are very human. They also very much make me think of traveling, because you may not see them quite so much, especially in urban areas in the United States, but you go to Sicily, you go to Mexico, you go to Malaysia, anywhere you go, pretty much, you see, whether it's just some a string on a balcony with some things drying in the sun, or a big colorful apartment building with clotheslines from every balcony. It's something you see really everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And it's accepted as normal.
Right.
It's okay to do it.
Well, I spend a lot of time in Japan, and we think of Japan as a very modern society, but they have washing machines but they don't dry their clothes in machines. Everyone dries their clothes on a line. And I brought clothes with me on my last trip that really they needed to be in the dryer to shrink back to shape. And we had to hunt through the neighborhood because my clothes, these trousers, came out, 12 inches longer than my legs. And I needed them to go into a dryer. And so it was a task to find a place to do that, because it's natural to dry your clothes. It's not an energy. Electricity is very expensive in Japan, so they're not going to waste energy and money for that.
Now, what about air quality? What sort of problems do we have drying clothes on the line with things like pollution, fire, particle? You hear so much, especially, let's say, lately, because we've had these spare the air days, and it's like, oh, I'm going to have a fire, I feel guilty. So has that influenced laundry?
I love the fact that by hanging out my laundry, I'm reducing my carbon emissions.
But, you're not getting little black specks on your sheets or anything?
Not lately. Fire, I used to live by a freeway, and I got a lot more gunk on my laundry. But it's out there maybe an hour, 2 hours. Mm-hmm. I shake it real quick before I take it in, and I don't find too much that. Maybe occasional bird dropping. But
so you just don't want to leave it out there and say, oh, it's Wednesday. I hung the laundry on Monday. What am I thinking?
That you're probably going to get some debris. Uh-huh.
But I had an experience with some friends in Austria, and we were sitting in a car, and they were rushing home. And it's like, what's the big rush? It's a beautiful Sunday afternoon. We should hike for more time. And no, this person had loads of laundry to iron. And it's like, why? What are you ironing? Oh, socks, underwear, undershirts, everything. And I was sitting in the back of the car, and I said, everything I'm wearing has not been ironed. And they literally moved away from me in the car, moved to the far side of the car. And it took me years to understand why.
Now, where was this?
This was in Austria.
Oh, no,
sorry. This was 20 years, 25 years ago. But now that I've done all this work with textiles and have taken to ironing many more things and even starching things. Historically, ironing served a function. It was a way to kill the lice that would live in the clothes that the washing, the hand washing, didn't get. So they ironed everything. They ironed their undershirts, their underwear, because it was a part of a keeping real clean and killing the potential fleas or nits. So there was a real function to it, not just that prim, proper, I'm rich enough to have my clothes pressed, but it was a sanitary function.
And then probably that sort of function gets into the culture, and people do things, and they don't even know why.
Right.
They just do it, and it's taboo not to do it, but they haven't necessarily traced back what that original motivation was.
Right. And the same way of the ironing, I'm not a big fan of starching, but I started starching because I'm doing so much textile work. And starching actually served a function. It stain-proofs your clothes. So, you know, people wore those big starch collars, and that kept all their neck sweat from being absorbed into the fibers. And so it was much easier to maintain things, and now we just starch because it looks pretty or whatever. But as you say, there was a real truth. Yes, yes.
Wow.
I know. That. I didn't know that. That's fascinating.
You're listening to Mouthful on KRCB Public Radio for Sonoma County.
After a while, we took in the clothes. Nobody said very much. Just some old wild shirts and a couple pairs of pants which nobody really wanted to touch. Mama come in and picked up a book, and Papa asked her what it was. Someone else asked, what do you care? Papa said, well, just because. And he started to take back the clothes, hang them on the line. It was January the 30th, and everybody was feeling fine. The next day.
It's Bob Dylan and the band from the Basement Tapes, The Clothesline Incident. We are talking about clotheslines here on Mouthful tonight. My guests, Sky Nichelski of Sonoma State University's Clothesline Project, Deborah Collotti, an artist in Sebastopol who works with clotheslines, and Laura Schaefer of Line Dry, who installs clotheslines and photographs your laundry if you would like her to do that. Okay, I want to talk about people's reaction, because it certainly seems that one of the things, particularly Deborah and Sky, part of what you're doing, it seems to me, is engaging the public. Mm-hmm. You have an installation. You want people to respond. Laura, it seems like one of the things you're doing, you're certainly engaging the people for whom you're installing clotheslines, but you're also documenting it and mm-hmm. then taking it out into the public sphere through photography, which is just another slightly different twist on the idea. So all of you just jump in however you want. But let's start with you, Sky, because you're addressing a pretty painful subject.
Well, sexual assault is an incredibly controversial and hard, it's a hard topic to talk about. And so by bringing in the Clothesline Project in April during Sexual Assault Awareness Month is one of the ways that we try to get students at Sonoma State to raise awareness and talk about sexual assault as a problem in our society. And so we hang these shirts up on a clothesline that have been that women can, mostly women and survivors of sexual assault, can kind of decorate these shirts in whatever way. And
where
they don't,
is it?
They don't
where does
have to
this
be
take
artists.
Place?
We hang it in the most kind of like central part of campus where the most foot traffic is.
Where is
between
that
classes.
These days?
It's in Stevenson Quad,
Stevenson Quad.
The student union. Mm-hmm. And we hang these shirts for about a week and try to get students to add to the line by also decorating a shirt.
Now, is it only students who have decorated all the shirts that you show, or do you have contributions from other sources?
Well, I know that it's students, faculty, and staff.
Okay.
We have shirts from previous years that could have also been like community is definitely welcome. Like outside community mm-hmm. in Sonoma County is welcome to contribute shirts to our line. Mm-hmm. I don't know how what percentage of
no,
like,
but it is open shirts. To anybody.
Yeah, it's open to anyone.
And what is the month
when this in April?
Oh, it's in April. Mm-hmm. Okay. So coming up, a nice time to be airing laundry, spring mm-hmm. cleaning, mm-hmm. and all that. So what are you finding in this attempt to engage people in this dialogue? Are you finding it successful? Are you getting people to talk about their stories?
Well, yeah, a lot of the shirts are very kind of like outspoken. No, and the person who designed that particular shirt is not holding back. Most mm-hmm. of the shirts are very blatant and blunt in how they're getting across the message of being assaulted, and so they get these messages across in ways that students can't really pretend they didn't read or avoid, and they're walking past and they stop to read the shirts because they're so shocking in mm-hmm. And so we definitely get students, whereas if we were tabling with flyers they would walk past sure. and probably not read the flyer. With the Clothesline Project, they're forced to kind of see these shirts waving, and then it draws their attention because it's colorful and it's huge, and they read the shirts, and I think we do a pretty good job of raising awareness, which is our goal.
Mm-hmm.
So
and it hangs, you said they hang for about a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this year, we're doing something different, where every minute we're going to have a gong or a whistle, some loud instrument, and every minute we'll be blowing that whistle or banging a gong to it's symbolic of one woman or mostly women, but people every minute being a victim and then a survivor of sexual assault, although not everyone survives. But mm-hmm. So this year, along with the project, will be during a few hours of each day for that week, mm-hmm. we'll be making noise to symbolize along with the clothesline itself.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a really good project.
Yeah.
It's a really
powerful
good project. I will make it a point to remind people about it.
Thank
to
you.
Come and see it, and I would also like to come myself. Deborah, how do you find people engaging with your art?
Well,
Or I should say your clothesline. I know you do a variety
yes,
of
yes.
art.
Yes, yes. Well, I was just in Italy, and I went to see a lot of art. And what I found interesting is people want to engage. And so because this particular project required, I would, when I met somebody, if I just, you know, a cafe owner or a ticket taker, anybody that I just had some little dynamic going, I would say, I'm working on a project, could you help me? And here, would you hold a hanky or a clothesline? If it was a group of people, like this group in a photograph here.
Yeah, where does this is a group of, oh, God, looks like maybe eight. I was like, eight people? Whereabouts?
This is in the southern Italy in my grandfather's hometown, and I went there for Day of the Dead. And I was in the kind of the publicity office for the little town, a mountain town called Sant'Agata di Puglia. And they were all talking at once, and I just jumped in and pushed them all in a cluster and pulled out a clothesline and said, here, hold this, and snapped a series of pictures, and they just totally loved that. But what I notice is people love to participate. They're so happy to not just be an observer in an artwork, but to actually be involved, that I didn't have people saying, no, I don't want to do this. And, you know, it's a slightly odd statement in the universe, we are alien, which is a point of view that I have about us as creatures on this planet.
Do you want to say a little bit more about what that statement means to you?
Well, we're the oddballs in the galaxy. We are the aliens, and I think we forget how unique we are. And so I thought it was kind of fun to just underline that.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone would hold a hanky or something and say, basically, I'm an oddball in the galaxy. And it's obvious, but it's unstated. And so having people participate, there was a lot of joy in that. People were so happy to be part of that. And again, because it's that clothesline and textiles, they don't feel threatened. It wasn't like I was saying, put this hat on and mess your hair or
do something,
pick this heavy yeah. object up. Uh-huh. Or, you know, it was a very benign and friendly way. And so it just opened doors of heartness from mm-hmm. people.
It is interesting, the story factor. I mean, there seems to be some stories that go through laundry because it's what we wear. It's so personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people in my project have talked to me about the stories of their childhood or their grandma's clothesline or their aunt's clothesline. And I finally got a dryer story the other day. I hadn't heard any dryer stories, but that little girl remembering burrowing into the warm towels fresh out of the dryer. And so there are dryer stories. But I think we all live in clothes and we all do laundry. And it's such a personal thing.
Yeah, I remember my first encounter with a dryer. a neighbor had one. We didn't. And I had a little terry cloth zip-up suit that was scratchy when it was dried on the line. And for some reason, I think I got wet at my neighbor's house, and my neighbor threw it in the dryer. And I loved how it felt on my skin. And so I made my mother, after she washed it, I would beg her to take it down the street to my friend Chrissy, I think her mother's name was Janet, and have it dried. And I remember, I was only four, I remember sitting on the floor of the garage, you know, that cold cement, in nothing on but my, you know, little panties, waiting for this terry cloth suit to dry and then putting it on and just loving. It was like putting a towel, you know, it's like a towel cut to fit. So that was my first encounter with a dryer.
Well, I find people get real strong emotional attachment to that feeling. Some people like their towels stiff off the line, and other people would never hang their towel on the line because they have to have it soft out of the dryer. So people have very strong opinions about these things, I found.
Yeah, and strong memory. It's a very physical memory. Mm-hmm. And I find physical memories can be as powerful as, you know, verbal or word memory, where you just, you know, you rub something across your skin and suddenly you're there again.
And the smell, like you said earlier, the smell of sheets fresh off the line or the smell of clothes out of the dryer.
Yeah, one of the visual memories I have of laundry, and I think I heard you mention this at Storytime for Grown-Ups, is running between the rows of sheets. So it's almost like little tunnels. And you could sort of judge the position of the sun by how my mother wouldn't necessarily bring things in an hour. Things would maybe be out there for 3 or 4 hours. And at first they would be cool, and there's that sort of cool scent and the smell of ivory soap rising from them. And then as they get dry and begin to absorb the sunlight and the sun's overhead, they get really warm. And then you can tell when the sun is behind you, you know, the sun's at your back and evening is going to be setting in a few hours. You can feel that in the sheets. And one of the things that always makes me think of now is the running fence that Christo installed in Sonoma County. I don't know, when did you come here, Laura?
I moved up here 2 years ago.
Okay, so this was in 1976 that Christo installed the running fence. And it was really quite a project. I think it took 4 years, and then it stretched over a lot of farmland, and it was in the news all the time in the Press Democrat, and it crossed from Sonoma County into Marin County back into Sonoma County until it just plunged into the sea. And that was really when we had the first traffic jams on 101. Before that, if there was ever a traffic jam, you knew it was because there was a car accident, because there was no commute traffic, there was nothing. And people came from all over the Bay Area and beyond to see the running fence. And I remember the first time I was stuck in traffic in my orange Volvo with my two little girls in the back of the car. And the way the light glanced off the fabric of the fence was absolutely incredible. It's something I will never forget.
Perpetuate
It is Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. Mmm, the smell of fresh laundry on the line. That's a delicious smell. Even if you can't eat it, you can certainly capture it. Sky, you were talking about a clothesline, a provocative or a beautiful clothesline in Cotati?
There is a clothesline that I used to drive past 5 days a week. I took a 5-year-old to school every day, and in the morning I'd drive him to school, and we passed this clothesline, and every single day it was just so beautiful. It's in Cotati, and I don't know if I can say what street it's
sure.
on.
Sure, Olaf Street.
On Olaf Street, yeah. Which I loved the name of the street as well, and just the combination of the name of the street and this beautiful clothesline, and it's in the front of a house, and the way they would arrange the clothing on the line was so artistic, and it was just always so colorful, and they always had wool socks, and it was just so great. And every time I drove past it, I really just enjoyed watching how they arranged their clothes that day and how the sun was kind of reflecting off mm-hmm. of like whatever they had on the line that day. It was wonderful.
And I hear that if you do hang out your laundry in Cotati, you can get taken to task. Yeah. People will report you to City Hall. So I think we need to start a reverse trend. Mm-hmm. One of the ways to do that is to talk to Laura Schaefer about having a clothesline installed in your house. If you're doing last-minute holiday shopping, it might be a nice idea. So what does somebody need to do to have a clothesline at their apartment, little tiny house, great big house, whatever?
Well, it's a personal choice about what you like, whether you like the long lines where you walk up and down them, or you like the sort of the umbrella style where it spins on a pole, or those pulley kind where you can attach it to some tree. So it depends on how many people you're doing laundry for. I estimate about 30 feet of clothesline per person, you know, for load. And the reason I got into being a solar dryer consultant is because it's sort of hard to make those decisions about, well, what do I want and where would it fit best and my sun options. And so there's all kinds of fun retractable clotheslines where you can pull them out and they retract back into a little metal box.
I remember seeing people in upper apartments, quite possibly in Martin Scorsese movies, I'm not sure, but the ones where you'd pull in a few things and it was on a pulley.
Yeah.
So you'd be up really high and you would just, you'd take your nice wooden clothespins and you'd pin up the clothes and then you'd work it so that you had more room, and then they're just dangling, you know, 4 or 5 stories up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's pretty easy to get a clothesline. I mean, you can spend hundreds of dollars. You know, I think the Real Goods catalog has a pretty expensive one, or you can go to the Ace Hardware, and for $10, you can get 100 feet of really heavy duty vinyl covered steel clothesline, and you can just wrap it around and tie a knot between two trees. So it's as easy as you want it to be, or it can be as complex as you want it to be to do it.
And then what about clothespins? Do we have any controversy on what's better, or should you have several kinds?
Well, I was warned by this woman. I had an article published about my business in the San Francisco Chronicle this fall, and I got a call from the woman in Redwood City saying, please alert people to the dangers of plastic clotheslines or clothespins. If you leave your plastic clothespins out in the sun and the weather, over time, the plastic degrades, and she was taking her laundry down, and one of her clothespins shattered, and a shard went in her eye before she could do anything because it's right at eye level, and had to drive herself to the hospital. So she said, please, make sure everybody knows how dangerous plastic clothespins can be if they stay out in the sun too long.
And so wooden ones are more aesthetically pleasing in any case. Now, you have brought this little circle of wooden clothespins, and it's a clothespin poem.
Yes, I've hand-stamped sort of inspirational words on clothespins, and that I gave you can take apart. You're actually supposed to use them.
To make poems?
And you just, you get little haikus that say, smell wind, find joy, or hang bliss, okay. Things like that.
To give you hang out, simple. Wine, tart, fun. let's see. Air. Find air. That's always a good thing. Now, back to you, Deborah. You collect clothespins from around the world?
Yeah, they're irresistible. What can I say?
And what do clothespins that you find in other cultures tell you about that culture? I mean, does it tell you something about the materials that are available? Or more about aesthetics?
Well, I'm looking for them aesthetically myself. Uh-huh. That's my drive. And but there seem to be preferences in different places. The Italians seem to really like light yellow plastic clothespins. And in my hotel, where it was forbidden to hang laundry, they had signs everywhere saying you're not allowed to hang your laundry
really?
Out the window.
So that's a popular enough endeavor that that hotels have to tell you not to do it?
Well, when you're traveling and you may have, like I usually travel with 5 pairs of socks, and so, you know, you can't go too many days without doing them, but 5 pairs and a few shirts is not enough for a load of laundry that costs mm-hmm. $10. So you want to wash those things by hand in your room and hang them out the window on the line that is there.
Oh, really?
But the rules say absolutely no using the lines. And then you look out the window, and on the ground there might be 300 clothespins. And, you know, my heart would just, oh, I wonder how I could get down there and scoop some up. So everywhere I've been, I mm-hmm. notice and I photograph them, clusters of clothespins or clothespin bags or laundry hung in funny places, like across a door. Someone in the southern Italy had strung a clothesline across a double wide door, and they were hanging like chest level. And I just found that so intriguing, because an American would never do that. And but the fact the Italians, of course, do hang their laundry out, and they're not going to pay for the cost of a dryer, and the tourists are all running around photographing these beautiful laundry lines, and yet as tourists with laundry to do ourselves, we're not allowed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll often hang, you know, I'll resort to a broom handle between two chairs if I have to, because, I mean, I dry things, but I'm going to start drying them outside because you've inspired me, but I dry things in my house because a dryer isn't good for everything.
Yes.
You know, something it makes certain things wear out more quickly. Some things don't look right. Some things shrink. Mm-hmm. So you often can come to my house and find laundry drying everywhere.
Yeah, I hang them over the fireplace because mm-hmm. it absorbs all of the moisture.
Yeah. Now, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Sky, how do people get more information about the Clothesline Project, both mm-hmm. the Sonoma State University coming up in April and then the National and International Project? Is there a website?
To contact Sonoma State about our Clothesline Project, if you wanted to contribute a shirt or just come to see it, you could email us at safe@sonoma.edu, or our number is 707-664-2217.
664-2217, mm-hmm. and that is in area code 707.
Mm-hmm. And the national project, I think, is just the clotheslineproject.org.
Okay, great. Well, good luck with the project.
Thank you.
I'm really looking forward to it, and I really appreciate you taking time to come and talk about it. Line Dry Laura Schaefer, Line Dry. How do people get a hold of you?
I've got a website. It's linedry.com, and I'm also, you can reach me by phone at 707-823-5421.
That's 707-823-5421. And all the information about your various endeavors with clotheslines will be there on your website?
Yeah.
Okay. And Deborah Collotti, how do people find you?
I do have a website. My address is www.dcollotti.com. And my last name is spelled like color, C-O-L-O, and then a spaghetti ending, T-T-I. So Collotti, dcollotti.com.
Dcollotti. And do you have any shows coming up?
I do. I have some work in Berkeley right now. I have a show coming up for Intersection in the Arts in San Francisco. But I'll have a show this summer at the Finley Community Center.
Oh, great.
That'll run all of June and July.
Excellent.
So in the display cases, so maybe I'll put a clothesline in there. Just
cool. Oh, I hope you do. And on that note, I got to say, we are out of time. Thanks very much to all of you. I've enjoyed this hour tremendously. And thank you for tuning in. Be sure to meet me back here next week, when we are going to be taking a look at the 2007 olive harvest, both here and in Tuscany. So see you next Sunday at 7 on Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour.
Start to glow, and as we watched on in disbelief, these were the words he spoke.
And the mama's in the kitchen,
she's been there all day.
I know she's cooking something good, so let's bow our heads and pray.
Sing to the Lord. this story. Well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too. And he'll sing,
to the Lord that praises me, it's time for dinner now, let's go.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the Acura TL with Bluetooth phone connectivity. Learn more at Acura.com.